Hi, this is Maya.
Hey, and this is Harry, and welcome back to Making It Big. In today's episode, we are joined by the multi-award-winning diversity and inclusion consultant and passionate equality campaigner, Hayley Benner.
I would prefer to work with an organisation that has no clue and really needs me than one that is just looking for a little bit extra. Saying that, I think I have always just tried to be authentic and be me for everything that I do, because I bring that lived experience that we've already spoken about. And I just don't really try to be anyone else, because it's really difficult.
In response to her own first-hand experiences, Hayley has made it her mission to inspire individuals and organisations to adopt a more sustainable and inclusive outlook. We discuss what it takes to break the ice around race and diversity, distinguish between our business and personal values, and learn how we, as young entrepreneurs, are in the best position to start a business fit for our time.
So just before we get started, Harry and I have recently subscribed to Startups Magazine, and we're learning about different entrepreneurial journeys and tech startups. So this magazine is an awesome digital and print magazine, and their latest issue is all about women in tech. This is a really important topic to me, but also one that is becoming more prominent. So definitely go and check them out and subscribe at www.startupsmagazine.co.uk. Hi Hayley, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Considering everything that's going on, I'm actually good. How are you both?
Really good, yeah. It's been a bit mental just moving back to uni.
Yeah, very. But we're getting by. So for our listeners, do you want to just tell us a bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I guess this is the weird part where I have to explain everything that I do, because I've got quite a mixed background. So my name's Hayley Bennett, and I guess my job, my role is a diversity and inclusion consultant, but I like to call myself diversity and inclusion consultant, speaker, and creative, because I think that covers more around all the different things I do. So basically my job and my business is to advise some of the world's largest employers and brands, as well as small charities and community organisations, around how to make their workplaces or their businesses more equitable, diverse and inclusive.
Wow.
No, that sounds really interesting. And I know me and Mara both we're quite a stickler for values and business values. Like we really think that, you know, especially as young people starting out in business, it's really important to have some values from the start, and especially with everything that's going on in the world at the moment. You know, not just in terms of a pandemic, but also in terms of kind of Black Lives Matter and that whole movement. I think values more than ever are really shifting to be the forefront of many kind of businesses starting out.
Yeah, no, that's, I think businesses are looking at that because they recognise that. I guess it's your generation, even though I feel like we're not that different in age. All the research says that, like, your generation, and you're going to be entering the workforce or creating your own businesses, you care a lot about values and purpose and making sure that you're working for organisations where they are aligned with your values. So a lot of big companies who have already been established for many, many years have been thinking about what their values are and where diversity and inclusion fits into that. And a lot of new companies that start out are embedding values into their ways of working, which, for all the sort of budding entrepreneurs that are listening, I personally feel that's really, really important. It's as important as you would think about designing your brand, designing your products. You should be thinking about what your organizational values and your purpose are as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think it's so true. And I think definitely even just like being in a university where a lot of people are trying to think of their own companies and go and, you know, work for themselves. You're right. The conversation is less about, how do we make money? But actually it is like they care about who they're working for, what the purpose is, and like if it aligns to their values. And I think that's really important. And hopefully we can touch on more about values in this podcast, which would be great.
Yeah. And actually, one question I had looking on your website, you say you specialise in this term race fluency, allyship and inclusive leadership. And I was just wondering, maybe you could speak to a bit about what those all mean and kind of how your role entails those three key areas.
Yeah, so I guess my expertise is around all areas of diversity and inclusion. But I think just naturally, because of my background, I've ended up specializing more on race equality.
Mm-hmm.
So in my career I started off, actually when I was a student, I worked as an intern at Kick It Out. So for those of you who follow football, you probably would have heard of it. For those of you who don't, Kick It Out is basically English football's equality and inclusion organization. It used to be called Let's Kick Racism Out of Football. I had to think about that for a second. So it's basically an anti-racism and anti-discrimination organisation. So my work really did start out in campaigning against discrimination,
mm-hmm.
And especially racism. So it's been really, really interesting, especially in the last 6 months where everyone's now talking about being anti-racist. We're seeing companies say they want to commit to being anti-racist. And whereas I probably used to hide a little bit of that expertise when I went into the corporate diversity and inclusion space, now I'm really using that experience and those skills to help employers on that journey around anti-racism. So essentially race fluency is just really like, a posh way of saying being able to talk about race and not being uncomfortable, because there's plenty of research out there that says that people at work, especially leaders, are just not comfortable talking about race.
Mm-hmm.
They fear saying the wrong thing. They fear offending somebody. And that actually is what is stopping a lot of progress being made. I've spoken to a lot of leaders, CEOs, people in like director positions in companies over the last 6 months. And I honestly feel really optimistic, because I do genuinely feel like people want to do something. But people just don't know where to start. Like, it doesn't come naturally to them to talk about these topics.
Yeah.
So a lot of my training has been around just equipping organisations to have those conversations, to break the ice around race.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the other sort of work that I do around inclusive leadership, it kind of fits into that. And I've got a program that I run now with a business partner, which looks at how leaders can actually connect race equality and racial justice. We saw all the statements. We saw letters from CEOs and businesses around that they cared about Black Lives Matter.
Mm.
How do we actually connect that with their purpose and their leadership style? So inclusive leaders are just leaders that are really self-aware of their own biases. They promote diversity and inclusion within their businesses. And they basically make sure that inclusion is part of their team. And that enables them, their team, as well as them, to be a lot more innovative, come up with new ideas faster, have less meetings, etc.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. And I think even what you just touched on at the end there, you know, these kinds of changes, they aren't just changes for the sake of changes. They actually benefit companies.
Yeah,
it makes the company better. And I think that's kind of perhaps more of a revelation that's more recent. Maybe people have thought in the past it's just about kind of ticking boxes and quotas, but actually people are realizing now diversity is actually one of the strongest kind of allies to actually progress and success, because you are just catering to so many different people and your product is going to be stronger, your service is going to be so much more appealing, you know, to so many more people.
No, it's so true. And I think sometimes we forget that the reason diversity is so important is it's those different perspectives. And I think when it is just done for the sake of it
mm-hmm.
people aren't really understanding why these changes need to be made. And I do think in the last, you know, couple of months with the events that have happened, there has been more awareness around it, perhaps. But I clearly, like, the work you're doing is, it's really interesting, because I guess you're really going into the depth of these organisations and making that change from within, because it's a cultural thing as well, like a business culture. It can't just be, you know, just for the show of it, like Harry was saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess on that, and kind of how you've spoken about, you know, how it touched on your background and how it became quite applicable to you, I guess one of my questions was to elaborate on that, is like, why, you know, what about you specifically, kind of your passions or maybe some personal connections to some of the issues? What has kind of got you into this space that you're now making your kind of career out of?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. It's a funny one, because whenever I meet people who work in the same line of work as me, there's always this question like, so let's all discuss like why we got into this work. And I'm just, isn't it like bloody obvious? Like, look at me, like I kind of have to do this if I want to get ahead in life. Like, things are going to need to change. Like, for me, it just is common sense. I think even if this wasn't my day job, I would be one of those people in the organisation who was like putting pressure on the leadership, was in like a network group and was doing this kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think it's such a privilege that I get paid to do this, even though it is hard and it takes a lot of energy and like emotional labor from me, but it is my life's passion.
Yeah.
So I guess like it's really interesting to see so many people who have started going on like this journey recently. Because I think I actually had this when I was like, well, I've always been really switched on, but I think when I was about 14, 15, I became like really, really aware around about inequality, how like systemic racism and other forms of discrimination shape our society. When I was at school, I was always reading like really political books and like going to a lot of conferences and stuff like that, which now I look back on was really uncool, but I somehow got away with it. But I was also that person at school that all my friends were people who came from like different backgrounds or weren't, I guess, the norm in the school. Mm. And I always had this urge to make people feel included. And I think part of that is just like myself and my like personal experience, like being mixed race, being like mixed race and black. I was always a minority in my classroom. And I also, because I have family members who are from different cultures and different races, I've had to have these conversations and I've had to be like race fluent, use my own word all my life. Mm-hmm. And I've had my eyes open to a lot of injustices for a really, really long time. Mm-hmm. So seeing like what my dad used to come home from work and tell me about from a race perspective, and he works in like the transport sector, and even my mum, like she was the main breadwinner in our household, and seeing the sacrifices that she was happy to make to go out and earn lots of money and to progress in, and to, I guess, give us a better quality of life. But the how she was perceived as a woman, like how she was perceived as being aggressive, how she was perceived as, I guess, putting family first when she didn't want to travel places, or over emotional when she was like missing us and she was on like big business trips. Like, I've always been really, really aware of how this pans out in the workplace. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, I've ended up here a little bit just by chance, because like I said, my passion is actually football. Mm-hmm. So when I was at university, I studied politics at SOAS, which is like very on brand. SOAS, like, I'm a typical person who went to SOAS, basically. Not to make any stereotypes for SOAS people listening, but you understand what I mean. But I was really lucky that I got an internship at Kick It Out. It's unpaid, which I think now is a bit of a taboo. But at the time, I kind of had to take it because I was in a position that many, I guess, first year students are in, where they're applying to like hundreds and hundreds of jobs because summer's coming, student loans long gone. I remember I had this spreadsheet where I applied for 200 jobs and I only had 3 come back to me.
Wow.
So one was like an estate agent, but basically it ended up being like basically a debt collector. So I lasted one day and quit. And then I got a job interview at Houses of Parliament, but then sort of decided it wasn't really for me. And then Kick It Out came back to me. And although it was unpaid, I thought this is so in line with my passion because... At the same time I was going to all these conferences, I was literally obsessed with football in my teens. I knew everything about football. So it just really, really aligned well. And my plan was to, it was my dream job, to be honest. I probably could have stayed at Kick It Out my whole life. But I essentially decided that those of you who follow sport, like sport isn't the like fairest industry. It's not like the most diverse off the field. I wanted to learn what I thought was good practice elsewhere. And my plan was always to bring it back to football. But then I just kind of got swept up and got excited working in different sectors. So I've been able to work with so many different companies and international companies, looking at all different like areas. So for me, that variety has been really, really interesting and kept me energized.
Completely.
It's so true. And I think what I really love about your story is you've kind of spoken about it from experience and like passion and having to firsthand go through some stuff and hear it even from your parents. And I think it reminds me of something we've spoken with our last two guests, actually, this idea of empathy and feeling qualified. And I think the fact you can literally firsthand empathize with the issues which you're trying to cater to and trying to fix, it's so much better than just kind of waiting for the world to fix itself, because you know, the people up in corporate ladders are not going to do it because they're not representative of the actual population that needs to, you know, stir change.
Yeah, for sure.
That's literally exactly what I had in mind when you asked me like why I do this, because I just want to fix the problems, because I just want to take things into my own hands. I think I've got this like crazy confidence that I do believe I can do anything I put my mind to. And I'm going to carry that, because I know like some of my friends will listen to this and be like, except maths, like maths definitely. But saying that, I think if I really wanted to do it, I probably could. But I just feel like I have the ability to change things, which is, I think, one of the reasons why I set up Nutmegs. And so that was my, I guess, first stint into like entrepreneurship, even though I didn't see it that way at the time. I just wanted to solve a problem that I saw panning out in football, whereas like women of colour, non-binary people of colour, anybody who doesn't fit into that mould of being a football fan doesn't have like a space to connect and be their authentic selves and enjoy football. So I just decided I was going to create it. Didn't really know what I was doing. I worked with my friend Amara on it, and we just got on with it and just set up a page, started doing events, and we've like grown quite a good following and a membership over the last year with absolutely zero funding, just a lot of favors. So I think I just like to problem solve, to be honest, and like, take matters into my own hands.
That's awesome. I think that's really cool. And kind of like, I guess Harry and I, even with this podcast, like we just saw that like no one else was doing it. So like, why not do it ourselves? Before I ask you about values, what football team do you support?
So I'm an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
But every time, but I know you are, Maya. But I just love football, to be honest. I watch all teams, but Arsenal is my club.
I like it. Good answer. So obviously I think the football side of stuff is really cool. And I think it's really nice how, I guess, you've been able to also make a difference in the corporate world. It would be really good to know more about business values and also personal values, because I think I've done a lot of work, I guess, on like my own personal values. But I actually get confused. Like, do your personal ones have to be the same as business? And what does that really mean? Like, when you go into these companies, how do you help them develop these values?
Yeah, I think that's a really good one. So I think for me, values are really, really important. So as soon as I decided I was going to go freelance, I actually sat down and wrote my values down. And I think coming from experience of working, I guess, with people or with organisations that didn't 100% align to my values, I was really clear around what those values were. So I think something about your values, you've got to learn from, I guess, being part of something which doesn't align with your values. That's when they really come to the fore. But even before I did my website, I just thought, like, what do I want this work to look like? What is important to me? And I think, Maya, what you said is really interesting, because my values are around being authentic and being authentically me. For me, it's really important that they do align, and that's kind of how I like to position myself. But I think what's really, really important is to think about like how other people's values fit into yours when you're working with others. And it is important to have a degree of flexibility. But at the end of the day, I think you've got to know what's really, really important to you in terms of how you work. So that's what I see values are. Just simply write down like what you believe your personal values are and which ones you want to bring into your business. So what qualities do you aim to use for your work? And if you're stuck, I would just suggest thinking about somebody that who you really admire and writing down what their qualities are and how you can bring them to life.
It's so true, isn't it? That is a great exercise. I guess in terms of like trying to instill these values in the companies you go and consult for, do you ever find there's kind of barriers in place, you know, like are some people quite, you know, because like we said at the start about kind of learning to be self-aware, that's quite a lot to ask maybe of people that have never had to do that before. Do you find like some of these values in terms of being so open, actually, are they often kind of hit back or push back? Like how easy is it to get through to them?
So I am actually a bit weird, because I find that really challenging, but I enjoy it when I do get that back. I would prefer to work with an organisation that has no clue and really needs me than one that is just looking for a little bit extra. Saying that, I think I have always just tried to be authentic and be me for everything that I do, because I bring that lived experience that we've already spoken about. And I just don't really try to be anyone else, because it's really difficult. I think companies like that, that's the number one piece of feedback I get. And what clients always say about me is that you're authentic, Hayley, down to earth, you connect with people. So I just sort of use that as my USP. I guess there are going to be companies that don't like that. And like, I have worked with like managers in the past who might say, oh, Hayley, you need to maybe adapt your style a little bit, which I would do to an extent, but I don't really want to compromise who I am, because that actually doesn't help me work well. So I'm honestly, if a company or an individual, a potential client is not keen on my style. For me, I'm okay, I can take that. Like, I just won't work with them because they're probably someone out there who's a better fit for them. Mm. There are literally thousands of like independent consultants working in this space. I feel like I want to do something different. Mm. There's been people working in this space for 20 odd years, and I think that's great. Like, people have got a lot of experience. But for me, I wouldn't be proud in 20 years' time if I'm still doing this work, because then nothing's changed.
Yeah.
So hopefully bringing something new and different and bringing my approach will help.
That's awesome. Well, I was actually just going to say, like, I've actually been having this conversation with my friends at the moment about values, because obviously a lot of us, we are choosing kind of like where we want to work in the future based on our values. But do you think they can change as well? Because I'm finding that mine have changed literally in the last like year, and even less than that. Like, I have a new one during COVID and lockdown that I found out as well. Is that normal for like you to kind of change what I guess is important to you and things like that?
Yeah, I think you need to be really flexible when you're thinking about values, but just having ones that really ground you. Mm. So have it, I guess, core values, and then you can have ones that might be like a bit more open to change. Mm. And I think especially if you're working with other individuals, like for you both, like Harry and Maya, I'm sure there's some values that you have which are different, mm. but there's some that you want to create jointly when you're doing this podcast. So it is about being appreciative of other people's values, or wherever you're working, you might have to adapt that organization's core values. Mm-hmm. So like the last place I worked, they had a value that was like bold, for example. Now that's not something that I would necessarily write down and say is one of my values or how I like to work, even though I probably am. Mm. But that's something that I try to adapt into my approach when I was working there, because I knew that that was important for that company.
Mm-hmm. Mm. No, I think that is so true, because often the values I kind of set for myself, I tend to be quite easy on myself. Like, I don't push myself. And actually, even just working with Maya, that actually the value of bold has been something that she's kind of got me on board with a bit more. Because originally, I probably wouldn't say, you know, I'm not very bold naturally. But actually, if I make it my value, it kind of forces me to have to, you know, look at that face on and think, you know, how can I be more bold in this situation? What would a bold person do right now? Mm-hmm. So I think there's definitely kind of a benefit to sharing values with other people.
Yeah, and I think as well, like thinking about your clients or your customers, for those of you who work in or setting up businesses that have customers and clients, you need to also be in tune around what your target audience values are. So just really giving an example, like it might be that you want to attract people who happen to be really, really environmentally conscious. Mm. And therefore, you're going to have to build that into how you run your business and the sort of suppliers that you use, you know, who you use for your printing, all those kind of things. It might not be something that you really care passionately about, but it likely will become something that you do really, really care about, because you're educated by the values of your market. So I think that's a really good example of what's been changing over the years. I know I make a lot of decisions now around packaging and things like that. Like, I want to reduce my, I guess, single-use plastic. So I would tend to go towards brands that are recyclable and things like that. So that's like a really tangible example around how values do change.
Completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, I guess this ties into like, if we're talking about organizations and kind of joint values, how do you kind of distinguish, I guess, between when you're doing something for like a social good, such as kind of, you know, making people aware of diversity and inclusion, how do you draw the line between, you know, profit making and, you know, commercial or just being charity? Because I think there is this kind of sort of conscious / subconscious bias where I think people think business is just kind of out there, you know, capitalist, it's just all about making money, it's not got really any values, it's no morals, and then charity is the good one. Yeah. But obviously, like, realistically, something's got to pay the bills, something's got to make money. Arguably the ones that are making money get more traction. So do you kind of find, when you're doing this kind of work, do you feel bad about charging for it, or do you feel it's sort of necessary? How do you stand with the kind of those topics?
Oh, that's such a good question. It is something that I have wrestled with, and you know what, it's only now you've asked me this, I sat back and I thought came into my head is, I just rushed to set up my company as a limited company. But like, I probably could have thought about setting it up as like a CIC or something like that. Mm. It didn't really come into my head at the time. But I guess that's because I do believe that I'm providing a service. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I'm coming with a lot of expertise, with credibility. Mm-hmm. I believe that I should be paid for that. I think there's levels to it. And I think everyone's who works in this space has like a different approach. I don't really want to be charging over the odds for this kind of work because I think I want it to be accessible. Now, at the same time, I believe that this is a massive business benefit to some of my clients. And I wouldn't want them to, I guess, try and justify paying me half as much as they would pay like a consultant from the Big Four who's helping them with something which is still going to give them commercial value. So I think it is difficult to price this kind of work. Like how I justified it in my head, and like one of my values is around transparency. I have like a standard day rate which I use for private companies and one that I would use for, I'd then discount it for charities or smaller organisations. But I'm always super open and transparent about what my rates are, because what I wouldn't want is for me to do a piece of work and then suddenly, because they're a big company, say, oh, I'm going to double my price. And then they might go and speak to somebody who I've worked with last week who knows that I charge them half. Like, that's not a good look and it doesn't sit with me morally. But to be honest, I think going back to your question, that the impact that I look to create comes first. But I also know that if I create an impact, I'm creating value. And therefore, it's having like a commercial impact as well.
Yeah.
Because if I was just doing work and ticking a box, it's not going to be sustainable. People are not going to come back to work with me. So I just work with impact first because that suits my style. And then I hope that then will like get me paid, essentially. But we know just from a diversity and inclusion point of view, I used to always be one of these people who works in this space saying that it needs to be about what's morally right. Like, people used to always talk about, you need a business case for diversity and inclusion, it needs to be bespoke to your organization. And I'll be honest and say that I was always that person in a conference who was like, no, we don't need a business case, like just do it. But then COVID happened and suddenly like so many businesses who had invested millions of pounds into this made their diversity teams redundant, stopped spending on this. And I was like, actually, this is exactly when people do need to be spending. So you do need it to be connected with your overall strategy and your business for it to really stick.
No, I think that's a really good point. And I think you're so right that a lot of like the Big Four kind of like companies are, they're trying to do it, but I feel like they don't always, I guess, practice what they preach. And what you're doing is, you know, you're really trying to make that change, no matter even if it's just like one company, however big or small. And I think that's really important. And I think, you know, for a lot of people starting companies, you know, when they're young or at uni or wherever, it's like, at the beginning of the podcast, you were saying, where do you start? And it can be quite tough. And I think it's quite hard to know, like, when you are building something, like, what are the things that you need to remember? Like, is it when you're recruiting people? Is it just the within the culture? And I think so you raise really important points about things that you should start fundamentally from the beginning, which I think is really, really good kind of, like, things to think about.
Yeah, and I think especially for students, I would say it's such a cool time to be thinking about starting your own business, even if you're going to do this in 20 years, because some, like, I don't know if it's a piece of advice, I guess it is something that people have always spoken to me about, is like, who's in your boardroom? And that's like not literal boardroom, but like, who do you go to for advice? Who do you go to for ideas? And if those are not a diverse group of people and people are coming at life from a very different point of view, like, you're probably not going to get a full range of ideas. So like, thinking about this analogy that if you go to 10 people and ask them for an idea, how many ideas do you get back? The answer is not always actually 10. Because it's likely that the 10 people that you ask are going to be very similar. So you might only get 3 different ideas back. So now as students, like, you've got the best opportunity for networking because you're surrounded by people who are, starting out and coming from all different places around the country, around the world. Start building your network now. Start building that boardroom of people from diverse perspectives. And use those experiences to help you shape your business in the future.
I find that so interesting, because only yesterday was I talking to my flatmate, shout out to Sophie, about this, because basically there's a book called Rebel Ideas, where she talks about like echo chambers, and basically, she'd done this exercise where she said, who are the five people that you go to about, like, any advice? And we actually realised that when we'd done it, they were really similar. And we kind of realised that how kind of narrow, I guess, the perspectives that we are getting back are. Even though we think that we are, you know, networking with a lot of different people, fundamentally, if you really think about it, there is more space to always, always, like, broaden that network. And exactly what you just said, like a simple thing like that, where just like writing down like the people who you do go to advice to, or like thinking about who's going to be in your boardroom, can just change it completely and open your eyes and like broaden your kind of education so much more. And I think that's really important.
Yeah,
for sure. I guess on that, kind of for advice for young people today, what are kind of some of the misperceptions you still see in it, like the kind of the 101s that you kind of think, you know, if we just knew that now and we could put that into our business, it would kind of save so much hassle down the line. Is there any kind of, you know, just quick, easy fixes? I guess it's all kind of subjective, but...
Yeah, no, I think it's kind of linked to the point we were just talking about, but don't just hire your friends.
Mm.
You can... I think there's benefits from having people around you that you really trust, people that you love and you admire. But having like really open channels to your recruitment, for example,
yeah,
you could get somebody who is really the best person for the job.
Mm.
Because they've seen this role, it's made for them. They would never have heard of you until you posted this application.
Mm.
And if you just go out to your friends or somebody you know, you're not necessarily getting the best person for the job. Like you'd be really, really lucky if they happened to be. Mm. So that's one thing I would say. I think the other thing is, it's around like making mistakes.
Mm.
I think people are scared of like cancel culture. Mm. Or saying the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it's about, for me, it's about showing leadership. You don't have to be perfect, but you need to do something, because what you do then might inspire somebody else. It might inspire one of your customers. It might inspire one of your competitors to start doing more. So you don't have to be perfect. You just have to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's so many companies who are like, yeah, we're doing all this work internally, and then we're going to like publish what we're doing once we get it right, and then people can hold us accountable. And I'm like, no, just do it. Just do something. Because you don't know who's being inspired by you. And this is a collective effort. It's not something that like one company is going to solve.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
This is where you do need to be a bit more collaborative as well.
Yeah.
For me, like since I started this, like one of my other values is collaboration. I've worked with people who I guess on paper are my competitors.
Mm.
And especially for entrepreneurs, I don't believe there's any such thing as like a competitor. There's always things you can work on together.
Mm-hmm.
And diversity and inclusion is one area of that, because you're kind of hiring the same people, you've got maybe got the same customers, so you've got the same problems when it comes to diversity and inclusion that you can work on together.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think that advice that you've given is pretty great, because I think yeah, a lot of people I'm talking to, and even like me and Harry both talk to, these are the sort of questions a lot of people are asking. And I think you're right. The point about collaboration is also so important, because I think that's a cultural thing that's really changing. And kind of, because it can be quite tough, right, to just open your like arms to anyone who's also kind of like also doing the same thing as you. So I think that's a really good point. And yeah, I mean, this podcast has been great. You've raised some really, really awesome things to think about, but just how important it is to not just have diversity and inclusion as an afterthought.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And really consider, if we are starting a company, and I know that Harry and I both want to, that it's something that you do from the beginning, and like you have that right intention and really try and change the culture rather than just doing it for the sake of it, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to say thank you so much, Hayley, for coming on. It's honestly been such a good podcast. And I think it's been quite different to some of the podcasts we have on, because it's so applicable to everyone. Like, this doesn't even have to be for business people. It can be going into other organizations, and they can take it on as their kind of entrepreneurial role in that company, is to kind of just make it more diverse, because it's going to help them out. It's going to help their company, and it's so holistically productive that, but yeah, it's been incredible. So thank you so much for coming on.
No, thank you for having me. It's been really interesting to talk to you, and I'm really optimistic about the future, because I do notice that I'm saying our generation, I'm lumping us together because I don't think I'm that much older than you. I do think that we want to change things. Like, all of the research says that actually, like, it's about passion, it's about purpose, it's about values.
For sure.
And I don't want people to get co-opted into workplaces or to start their businesses and forget all of that. Mm-hmm. Like, I was always told when I was a student, like, oh, when you grow up, like, you're going to change what you think because you're going to have bills to pay.
Yeah.
No, like, let's actually all hold each other to account on this and to make this stick and to make this important, like, we're the future.
So,
I would just like to say thank you.
You're welcome.
I always try and make like everything that I do accessible. Yeah. So I post a lot of advice for like, I guess, for any individual to take on board when it comes to diversity and inclusion. So feel free to connect with me.
Yeah, on LinkedIn, I was going to say, do you want to like kind of plug where people can find you?
Yeah, so I'm trying to do a bit more on Instagram now. My handle is at HayleyTVB. Mm-hmm. So I post a lot of advice around diversity and inclusion on there. On LinkedIn, you can find me Hayley Bennett. I think my username on there is also HayleyTVB, and on Twitter as well.
Sure.
And just feel free to ask me some questions. I'm super busy at the moment, but I always get back to people eventually.
Yeah, I can vouch
so
for that.
So please do get in touch. Oh, good.
Yeah, and we'll put it all on our Instagram and LinkedIn as well, so definitely check that out. But yeah, thank you so much, and see you in the next episode.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.